The Pentagon has identified three of the four Americans killed in an ISIS suicide bombing in Syria on Wednesday. They are Army Chief Warrant Officer Jonathan Farmer of Boynton Beach, Florida, Navy cryptologic technician Shannon Kent of upstate New York, and Scott Wirtz, a Defense Department civilian employee from St. Louis, Missouri. The name of the fourth American killed in the bombing has not been released. President Trump paid tribute to them yesterday at the Pentagon.
Before presenting the results of our missile defense review, I want to take a moment to express my deepest condolences to the families of the brave American heroes who laid down their lives yesterday in selfless service to our nation. These are great people, great, great people.
Wednesday's attack comes after the president announced that U.S. troops will be coming home from Syria because, as he said, ISIS has been defeated. Gail Tamak-Lamon is senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She has made several trips to Syria in recent months and writes about them in Foreign Affairs. Gail, welcome back to Here and Now.
Great to join you again.
The president says ISIS has been defeated. The vice president reiterated that sentiment in a speech this week at the State Department. He spoke about an hour after the Pentagon confirmed the deaths and injuries among these American forces. Vice President Pence did not mention the attack. Has ISIS been defeated?
Just take a quick moment to start by thinking of all of the families of those who are lost in this tragedy in Manbij, which is a town I visited a lot this past year. The question of whether ISIS has been defeated, I mean, there's no question that ISIS has lost significant, close to all of its territory. But as anybody kind of on the ground would tell you, it's much easier to defeat a terrorist than an ideology. And so the thing you hear a lot of people talking about on the ground in northeast Syria is ISIS reemergence and sleeper cells and whether this really fragile stability, which the U.S. presence has enabled, and has allowed the partner force to really be the boots on the ground to enforce, is in the crosshairs.
And so you say, and we'll get to this, that the Americans have helped to enforce a certain amount of stability. But I wonder if you think that there is a link between President Trump saying ISIS has been defeated and that Americans will be withdrawn from Syria and the ISIS timing of this attack on Wednesday that killed Americans.
ISIS is always looking for a good time to attack, words or no words. And so I think really the thing to look at in the context of this attack is not Washington politics, but on the ground reality in Syria. And that is that ISIS, while it has lost its territory, it has not given up its fight.
So why does that run so counter to what we're hearing from the Trump administration?
You know, I don't know if it does in the sense that, yes, ISIS has certainly lost, you know, its ground. But it is much harder to keep it defeated. And, you know, the folks I've talked to on the ground really talk to you about needing to keep the pressure on, because the more normalcy comes, the more it threatens that ISIS ideology. And if you want to think about the moms and dads I've had the privilege of spending time with, they're living on the front lines of the fight against extremism. And the people who are helping them wage their battle for stability and normalcy and against extremism is the partner force backed up by the Americans. And to get to your question, I think part of what we're seeing is that America is so disconnected from 17 years of war that it barely checks in to see whether there's a difference between Syria and Iraq or Syria and Afghanistan. And it really doesn't see or get to be exposed to the fact that what the U.S. forces are doing on the ground is actually working in the fight against ISIS, but that that fight is not zero or one.
So if you're saying America doesn't check in, I mean, you're talking about America over here doesn't check in. So
yeah.
So what are you saying the differences are in the fight against ISIS specifically, but terrorism, militant Islam in Afghanistan versus Iraq versus Syria?
What you see in northeast Syria is a partner force that is doing the fighting and dying, backed up by this nearly invisible U.S. presence. And I'll say, as somebody who's had the privilege of going four times last year, every quarter, what you see is nearly alone in the post-9/11 conflicts, a story of forward momentum that has been uninterrupted and very fragile stability that is working.
Okay, and I want to hear the positive stories, and I know that you have them from your visits. But if the United States then, as you say, has a small presence, 2,000 troops, and if you say that ISIS is looking for any reason to be on the attack. That means ISIS still has a presence. Is it going to be harder to keep that stability that you say the United States is partly responsible for when the troops get pulled out?
The stability that has been achieved by the partner force very much hangs in the balance of U.S. policy decisions. And that's because the forces who are fighting ISIS will be forced to fight other folks in the region and to defend their families. If there is a Turkish offensive, a lot of the folks who are fighting ISIS will go straight home to their families and really try to protect their families against whatever comes, against the uncertainty of whatever comes. I think the moms and dads who I meet who have the chance to have stability, they don't want things to be upended. What they're looking for is a continuation of stability, not more uncertainty.
One of the places where you have spent a lot of your time when you go to Syria is Raqqa. Raqqa was liberated from ISIS in late 2017. The city had been basically destroyed in the battle. But against this backdrop of the violence, you have seen some signs of hope. Tell us about one particular one that you've written about. And this is at a perfume shop that's run by a Syrian man whom you met. Tell us about that.
Yes, in April, Lisa, I walked into downtown Raqqa. My colleague and I were walking around. And I said, who opens a perfume shop on a street that is absolutely deserted and only made of rubble, but it's one of the main thoroughfares into Raqqa? And this question just kept coming at me because of all the things that the city needed. I thought, you know, perfume? I don't understand. I really want to figure out who this person is. I'm completely fascinated.
And there was like decimated land all around him. I mean, a city
absolutely.
Of ruins.
Absolutely. I mean, no other storefronts were open on the street at the time. A couple were open across the street, but it was basically rubble, 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 perfume shop, rubble. And so I was fascinated by this young man who was sitting at this counter filled with glasses with different colored perfumes behind him. And he was sitting reading, and when we went back, he wasn't there. And we finally caught up with him in December. And I spent a little bit of time with him, and his name is Mohammed. He's 20, and he has had this perfume shop now for 4 years. Came back and spent a month rebuilding it once the city was liberated from ISIS. And he put it on Facebook that he was open again, and his clients started coming back. And he's now at about, you know, 50 to 60 customers a day. And he said, listen, my business is working. I'm supporting my family. You know, nobody comes and tells us what to wear or what to do in the way that they did under ISIS times. And I can make a difference with this business for my family and for my neighborhood. And I have dreams of growing it. And he told me, he said, you know, we just want to see more of this slight, you know, chance of normalcy that we have today continue.
I can see where people would want that kind of normalcy. But how could people afford something like perfume in a place that has been eviscerated?
Well, he said to me something that was so obvious when I thought about it and realized, you know, how inane my question was. Because I asked him, why perfume? And he said, perfume and cigarettes, those are not luxuries. Everybody needs them no matter what. And I said, you're 100% right. You know, and it was really, we had this moment where I just started laughing. And, you know, the answer was so obvious. But, you know, he's somebody who knows his market. He's a great entrepreneur.
I wonder what your takeaway is. I mean, it's a great story. How much can we make of that in the total picture there?
The fight against extremism is won every single day by young people who refuse to give in. These young folks, yes, they're one story, the hairdressers you'll meet in the foreign affairs story, the perfume shop entrepreneur, the pajama entrepreneur, right? The young women working for security forces. They're each one life. But all of those lives add up to people who are waging the battle that the Americans don't have to wage, right? Against extremism themselves. They are living on the front lines. And U.S. policy has helped to support their battle for normalcy and against extremism. And I think what America has failed to realize and what we haven't talked about enough is that what we have done in terms of U.S. policy has actually achieved its goals.
Well, thank you for speaking to us about it. Gail Tzimak-Lamon, Senior Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She has made several trips to Syria in recent months and writes about them in Foreign Affairs. We'll make a link to the website. Thank you very much, Gail.
Great to join you.